home. It's a joy and a blessing to be with you for study of Bhagavad Gita. And each time that we have a session, I begin by sharing teachings from Yogacharya O'Brien that she has shared with us in the past. And then I'll offer a few comments and we'll have time for sharing reflections. Let's take a moment and turn within. We open ourselves to divine wisdom, the light of truth that shines into and through all of life. We open ourselves to our innate wisdom as we study this teaching from the Bhagavad Gita. We hear commentaries from other teachers. We open ourselves to our inner commentary, our inner knowing. May these teachings bless our lives, and may we take them into the world and be a blessing for all. Om, peace, peace, peace. Today we begin examination of chapter 3 of the Gita. This is considered to be the chapter on yoga of action, karma yoga. And once again, Arjuna, the seeking soul, begins with a question that indicates his confusion, but this time at a different level. In chapter 1, you recall, Arjuna is in despair. He's unable to see how to face the challenges before him. And he asks the Lord, Krishna, for help, for spiritual insight and light upon his path. But when he's offered instruction, he refuses it. He says, "Oh, I want to be your disciple, but don't tell me what to do." In chapter 2, Arjuna's resistance is overcome through discipline and divine grace. He becomes ready for guidance, and Krishna reveals the essential truth about our unchanging existence as spiritual beings. And he also offers insights into the changeable nature of the natural world and the role of the mind in realizing knowledge and acting skillfully. In chapter 2, Arjuna is introduced to Samkhya Yoga, which distinguishes between spirit and matter, and which offers a way of liberation through self-knowledge. He also begins to give a higher insight into karma yoga in the form of buddhi yoga, the purification of discernment for non-binding action. Now, in chapter 3, Arjuna wonders which approach is best, knowledge or action, contemplation or service. In chapter 2, verse 49, Krishna says, "Action is inferior by far to the yoga of wisdom. One must seek refuge in wisdom." But then Krishna also told Arjuna to act, to fight, to fulfill his dharma as a warrior. So let's look at chapter 3's opening verses. In verse 1, Arjuna says, "If knowledge is better than action, O Lord, why do you urge me to engage in this terrible action?" And then in verse 2, he says, "With speech that seems equivalence," meaning ambiguous or has more than one interpretation, "with speech that seems equivalence, you confuse my intelligence. Tell me surely this one thing. How should I obtain the highest good?" So in these first two questions, Arjuna has revealed some insights for us about our process of learning on the path and the way of discipleship, the way of working with the spiritual teacher, with our self-inquiry, with our higher self. Subtle changes in Arjuna's awareness and receptivity become evident in these questions. You know, earlier he showed the resistance of tamas guna. Even though he was in trouble and said he wanted help, he defiantly refused Krishna's direction, and he asserted self-will. With that tenacity and stuckness that's indicative of tamas guna, resistance. Now, in chapter 3, we can hear a different quality in his questioning, which indicates the arising of sattva guna, or the quality of illumination. Yogacharya says that Arjuna's progression revealed in the transition between chapter 2 and chapter 3 reminds her of what it was like to sit with her guru, Roy Eugene Davis, and hear the teachings about the nature of consciousness and living the awakened life. She said when she was listening to him, everything was absolutely clear. She even felt in some ways that she was just being reminded of something that she already knew. And she said she could experience this in the same way when she would read his commentary on the scriptures or the commentary of other gurus in our lineage. But she said, as soon as she left the satsang, the time with him, she couldn't remember with clarity how it all fit together. And that's Arjuna's experience now. So through chapter 2, he felt clear. And now, he's unsure again. Arjuna's questions, "No, wait a minute, I'm not exactly sure what I'm supposed to do. How does this actually work? Should I leave my job and my family and rigorously pursue this path of self-knowledge? If knowledge is the ultimate way of self-realization, then what's the purpose of engaging in action? Why should I struggle with work, especially with action that is so challenging?" Many of us have had this moment, right? When the teachings feel so luminous, yet difficult to integrate with family, with work, and with our responsibilities. And we may even wonder if we somehow missed the path of monasticism, or if we're even cut out for spiritual realization. You know, maybe it just requires that we leave everything behind and we go sit in a cave in India and meditate. The Gita reveals that doubt is part of the journey, and that step-by-step resolution comes. For those who remain steadfast, those who develop receptivity to the teachings, even when they don't fully understand them, For those, illumination unfolds. So in this chapter, Arjuna's receptivity is revealed in how he asks the questions. He doesn't any longer accuse Krishna. He lifts his confusion respectfully, saying, "If I heard you right." Sidebar. You know, instead of saying, "You said," okay, "if I heard you right, this seems contradictory to me, what you said." So his sincerity reflects the essential attitude of the seeker approaching the guru or the teacher or the inner self with reverence and a willingness to learn. Swami Nikilananda translates the verses in this way. Verse 1, he says, "If you hold, O Janardan, that knowledge is superior to action, why then, O Keshava, do you engage me in this terrible action?" And then verse 2, "With these apparent contradictory words, you confuse my understanding. Tell me definitely that one thing by which I shall reach the highest goal." So we hear Arjuna's humility. He doesn't blame Krishna. He takes responsibility for his confusion. He wants clarity. And this openness marks true discipleship. Because spiritual learning requires discernment and faith. Faith in the teachings, faith in the teacher, and faith in the higher self. If we're always trying to disprove what we hear, our mind cannot be clear enough to receive. So ultimately, the process is purification of the ego. You know, the false self that says, "I know." Yoga does not ask for blind belief. It asks us to verify what we are learning through our own experience. The traditional teacher-student prayer begins with, "May there be no enmity between us. May our study illumine our consciousness." And this is the spirit that Arjuna now embodies. Of course, Arjuna, like us, is seeking simplicity. "Tell me the one thing I must do to attain realization." We all want that. What is the one thing? And while the path is simple, it's not necessarily easy. Knowledge must be lived, and action is unavoidable. These two must come together. As students of yoga, we learn the principles like non-harming, truthfulness, and we want formulas. Tell me exactly what I need to do to live truthfully. Give me the formula. But it's more like learning to ride a bike. We learn the basics, but the real learning comes with experience. It comes with navigating the changing terrain. Now, verse 3 of chapter 3 from Radhakrishnan's translation, the Blessed Lord said, "O blameless one." Isn't that sweet? He's calling Arjuna blameless one. "O blameless one, in this world, a twofold way of life has been taught by me. The path of knowledge for people of contemplation, and that of works for people of action. In verse 3, these two ways are presented as different approaches to the same goal, according to the inclination of the seeker. Some are inclined toward contemplation, and others are inclined toward action. It could be like extrovert or introvert way of life. But it's important for us to understand the goal of self and God realization remains the same. Spiritually insightful action is a way of purifying the mind to facilitate higher realization. Spiritually insightful action is a way of purifying the mind to facilitate higher realization. In the following verses, we see how both knowledge and action are needed. With the right understanding, they are not incompatible. So verse 4 says, "Not by abstention from work does one attain freedom, nor by mere renunciation does one reach perfection." Verse 5 says, "For no one can remain even for a moment without doing work. Everyone is made to act helplessly by the impulses born of nature. Being embodied, being in the world, it is not possible to be without action." Life itself is action. Being embodied, we cannot avoid it. The key is how to act with freedom, how to engage in the world without bondage. Radhakrishnan offers this beautiful commentary. "While life remains, action is unavoidable. Thinking is an act. Action is unavoidable. Living is an act. And these acts cause many effects. To be free from desire, from the illusion of personal interest, is the true non-action, and not the physical abstention from action." So when it is said that works cease for a person who is liberated, all that is meant is that they no further have personal necessity for works. It's a new way of being in the world that is surrendered to divine will. It's an exercise of letting go of personal self-will, of ego. And then he continues. He says, "When it is said that work ceases for a person who is liberated, all that is meant is that they have no further personal necessity for works. It does not mean that they flee from action and take refuge in blissful inaction." Rats. "It does not mean that they flee from action and take refuge in blissful inaction. When egoism is removed," he says, "action springs from the depths and is governed by the supreme. Secretly seated in the heart, free from desire and attachment, one with all beings. That person acts out of the profoundest depths of their inner being, governed by their immortal divine higher self. That is the goal, to be able to live by divine impulse. As Paramahansa Yogananda put it, to be able to be guided by the soul and not by the conditioned responses of the mind, to be free from the sorrow-producing self-will, to see clearly and to love fully. And so at this point in chapter 3, we say, yes, of course, but how does it work? And we continue next time with this unfolding teaching of karma yoga, the way of finding freedom through action. I can really relate to that, all of it. I can even remember telling Uma after my first silent retreat. Well, I didn't tell her, I wrote her a note. And said, I have decided I'm not going to speak anymore. This is my very first silent retreat. I'm going to remain in silence. She started laughing and she said, no, you aren't, speak now. You weren't born in a cave in the Himalayas. You have things to do here, speak now. And you know, it probably was a year or a month or 5 years, I don't remember how long later, I thought, you know, she's right. I should go to a cave in the Himalayas. You've probably all gone through this. I love my wife, I love my life, but maybe I should just leave it all. So I talked to Uma again, she laughed again and said, no, you were born here, this is your life. If you go there, you are gonna be there. Work it out here. Oh my goodness. So I was confused, like Arjuna is in chapter 3. And, you know, in chapter 2, Krishna just introduced to Arjuna the wisdom of inner equanimity, detachment and discernment, which Arjuna interprets as renunciation. I'm going to give it all up. And now Krishna urges him again to act. And like us, Arjuna wonders, if inner realization is the highest goal, why should I act in the world at all? Wouldn't it be better to withdraw from it all and seek peace and solitude? And this is the spiritual dilemma of our time. You know, in this world right now that's shaken by violence, by unrest, by injustice, by environmental crisis, by personal joys and sorrows, the world is shaken. And we ask ourselves, what does it mean to be a yogi during this time? Here I am in Ireland with all these people. What does it mean to be a yogi? How do I reconcile this longing for inner peace with the call to serve this world that is in pain? Do you have those questions? I do. And Kriya Yoga offers us profound answer. Renunciation is not escape. It is ego transcendence. It is to act without selfish desire, without me, my, mine. That's the highest offering. And that's the way of karma yoga, the path of selfless service, wherever we're offering that service, without attachment. You know, born from soul awareness, letting our selfless service arise from the soul, not from outside of us. Roy Eugene Davis writes, while knowledge of ultimate reality is essential, knowledge alone is not enough. We must function in the world as spiritual beings with understanding. That sounds just like him, doesn't it? So practical. Lahiri Mahashaya, as you know, the householder yogi, known as the father of Kriya Yoga, he elaborates on this. He says, to give up action without giving up the doership is false renunciation. Real renunciation is performing actions without attachment and without ego. Real renunciation is performing actions without attachment and without ego. So, this Saturday, how do I go to a march? I'm just saying, this Saturday, there are some marches. How, if that's my inclination, how do I go to a march as a renunciate, you know, a Kriya Yogi, without attachment, without ego, in this time when so many are grieving or angry or even paralyzed, feel paralyzed by the suffering in the world, these verses hold a lamp for us about how to be. We don't need to choose between silence and action. We need to act from silence, from clarity, from our soul awareness. We need to bring the light of wisdom to the march. Because that's what our world needs, is more luminosity. Enough people are pushing. We need more of us shining. Even in stillness, we act, as the Gita told us. You know, the gunas are moving through everything. Even in stillness, we act. The breath flows, that's an action. The heart beats, the mind spins narratives. Even if we call it contemplation, the mind is doing something. So there's action in everything. We are participants in this world. The question is, this is the question for us, what is moving us? Paramahansa Yogananda wrote, you cannot renounce action while living. Renounce instead the ego that claims to be the doer, and you will be free. So, while I don't really like using these strong words, but it means something to us, while violence erupts and injustice is exposed, there can be a temptation to turn away from it as a yogi. But the Gita shows us another way, sacred engagement. To meet the moment with compassion and non-reactivity. To become instruments of divine clarity rather than vehicles of fear, rage, and apathy. Roy G. writes, we can allow the powers of nature to operate without being caught in them. With regular superconscious meditation, we learn to observe rather than identify. We respond rather than react. I know I'm preaching to the choir of meditators, but I think it's a good reminder for us. So you know I like things in threes or fours. Today we have three key Kriya Yoga applications for a world in crisis. Da, da, da. I don't know. Do you like when I use those intense words? We know that I mean that there's a world underneath all that crisis, the real world that is of peace and unity. So, three things. One, live your Dharma in the midst of change. You know, like Arjuna, each of us has our unique place in the unfolding whole. And we have to remember that Dharma is not some personal ambition. It's the soul's natural response to meet the needs of the moment. So we ask regularly, what is mine to do now? What is mine to do now? The world is changing around us. So we have to keep asking, what is mine to do now? In the face of injustice, how am I called to show up? This will be different for every one of us. How am I called to show up with courage, with listening, with prayerful resistance, and quiet love? You know, whether caring for our family or organizing for justice or planting a garden. When we act with divine remembrance, our work becomes an offering. Anything that we're doing. So number one, live your Dharma in the midst of change. Number two, balance inner and outer sadhana. Meditation is not a luxury. Uma will also often tell us, meditation is not a luxury. It is essential preparation for being in the world. I think of it right now that when we sit daily, we build a foundation for a peaceful revolution that helps us to act from, not from urgency or outrage, but from attuned awareness with divine reality. So we're moved from within. We're not reacting to everything going on outside of us. There's a lot going on. Have you noticed? We don't have to be caught in it to be in it. Number two, balance inner and outer sadhana. Roy G said, we meditate not to withdraw from the world, but to fully engage in it from an awakened level of our being. So in times of turmoil, let your sadhana be your resistance, your act of grounding, of not being swept into the collective storm. Show up as your soul nature. Number three, very important. Witness the gunas in your, I'll say, social life and inner life. Witness the gunas in your life. The Gita teaches us, Samkhya teaches us that the gunas are always at play. We know that. In this realm, everything has the gunas in it. So we have to observe is my response to whatever, you know, one conversation or our nation or our world, whatever, or our thought, is my response coming from tamas guna, from apathy or despair? Or is it coming from rajas guna, from reactivity or anger? Or is there sattva arising from a place of truthful calm and compassionate clarity? And by doing this over time, this kind of discernment helps us to act in a way that lifts everything around us up instead of agitating it. There is enough agitation in the world. Makes me think of a washing machine, you know, when it's at the agitate stage, one of the old ones, the whole house is shaking and you just want to go down there and unplug the darn thing. But you can just show up and be a grounding presence and put a little pressure on it and it stops shaking the whole world. So closing reflection. You know, we have to remember that Krishna does not ask Arjuna to fight in order to win. He doesn't say, go win the battle. He says, take action. It's your dharma. Take action with full presence, without personal attachment. So this path of sacred engagement for us as Kriya Yoga reveals how to be in the world but not of it. How to take action without becoming entangled. How to respond without reacting. You know, how to let our life be a conscious offering. When the world around us trembles with fear and rage, when violence erupts, when structures break down, you know, whether this is a political thought or I know some of you are caring for loved ones, it has that same, or you're just with your family of origin, as I said, in Ireland, you know, trying to navigate all of this, working with your children. When the world we're interacting with trembles with fear, sometimes with rage, with a sort of violence that erupts and structures we're used to having break down, my prayer is that we remember this radiant instruction from Paramahansa Yogananda. And this is my sign that I'm carrying on Saturday. Be calm amid the crash of breaking worlds. And be calm is really big. Be calm amid the crash of breaking world. So let this be our vow, to be instruments of peace even in a storm, and to act from soul awareness even in times of chaos, to hold the world with love and to not lose our center. And we will lose our center. So to joyously celebrate when we recognize we have lost our center, to honor the one who noticed, and to come back, and to let our lives be an offering of courage, of clarity, and of compassionate action. Be calm amid the crash of breaking worlds. And you can do it. We can do it. As always, it's a lot. however you get your news, it's a lot to witness. Right now, I'll just say what's been going on in LA. In that little teeny tiny two block part of LA that is being called all of Los Angeles. But it's a lot to witness this one little thing, or what's going on in our, you know, health issues with our loved ones, things going on with our children, whatever it is. It's a lot. It's a lot to witness that. And, you know, sometimes our, I don't know, I'll say reaction is to just sink. I don't know what to do. Tell me the one right thing to do. Right? Can I go to a march and be a yogi? It's a real question. Yes. Thank goodness Yogacharya O'Brien did it and showed me how to go to a march and be a yogi. She, you know, she went to that first march in San Jose, the Women's March, and shared her poem. What was that called? Brahmi knows. Can you tell us? Brahmi, do you remember the name of Uma's poem?
Yes, oh, Madaria, we inaugurate peace, and it's on YouTube.
Remember, we inaugurate peace. And I'm younger, so I wasn't around when all of the stuff was going on in the 60s and 70s. I was too young to be all part of all of that. But thank goodness Uma had a good background in that, and she had enough spiritual wisdom to demonstrate how to demonstrate as a yogi. The sign we had at that time, actually, Kavita Parthenia Hicks had the sign. We found her out at City Hall, just God brought us together. And I think her big sign said, "Yogis for Peace." Okay, Laurel, how are you doing up there in Lake Oswego, Oregon? Are you in a treehouse still? She's in a treehouse.
Yes, I'm in a treehouse.
I heard.
Thank you for that. I think the timing was beautiful. And I will just say, for my own experience, I've witnessed peacefulness in the crowds in Portland. And people are, you know, it's kind of interesting. People are coming in community with joy. And I bring with me the yamas and the niyamas, but, you know, really truthfulness. We're witnessing and being truthful when we're out with our friends and being in nature. I mean, of course, you know, we're crossing the Willamette, you know, two times when we do our march. And there has been only love and joy and harmony. And so I think that's what's in my heart and the signs that I bring. The last time it was about be courageous. And, you know, peace signs and everything. So so thank you for the teachings, because they're in my heart. And I think that the people that have witnessed what has happened, we've learned a lot about how people need to be witnesses of what truth is and speak it. And I think there are means to do that. And I appreciate that we're not, we don't have to feel that we're powerless.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what I think people are coming with that in mind and know what to do with that. So.
Yeah, it reminds me of one time we were at Roy's ashram in Georgia, and it was time to vote, and this was the Sarah Palin era. And someone asked him about voting, not who to vote for, but what do we do as yogis? So they were asking, you know, how do we act politically? And he said, as someone who's awake, you have an obligation to act in your community. And he said, to act in the way that is right for you. So some of us, it means carry a sign and walk across the bridge twice. And for some of us, it means to stay home and pray. So we each of us decide, what does it mean? And I know we're all dealing with different things. You know, sometimes we have very big things going on in our own life with our own health or work or whatever it is, with our children, with the health of loved ones. You know, we all have these different battles showing up in front of us. But as yogis, the answer is the same, right? Michael, it's nice to see you both. Share our blessings with Kelly today, please. Mukti Devi.
Thank you so much, Acharya Sundari. I'm just enjoying that. I was looking at where some of the marches are, and one of them is, or I'm not endorsing one organization or march over another, but one of them is the group's is entitled Stand Up America. And it reminds me of Stand Up Arjuna. And I love seeing Krishna's words echoed in that way in the, you know, our nation's culture. So. I wanted to share that little happy
reflection. Isn't that a beautiful reflection that we get to witness the hand of Krishna in action, the hand of the Supreme Lord in action, even when people don't know it? How beautiful. Okay, others, what's up? Someone told me yesterday how when they hear from others in our community, every now and then they hear something from one of you that really sparks a light in them for their spiritual journey. Sumati, can you click it over so we can see the other group?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We'll go back. Anyone in the room?
Sure.
Shri.
I saw just on the...
Can you hear her? Okay.
Again, Krishna's the call to action. I saw a beautiful sign yesterday on the back of somebody's car. When injustice becomes law, resistance is a duty.
Oh, wow.
And so I've been thinking about how to, because I've been to, I was on Tuesday, but just trying to, how to calm, be present in the wave as the wave is breaking.
Yeah. How to surf.
How to be present. Because it's necessary.
Yeah.
The worlds are clashing, and it's necessary to be present, not be apathetic, but to be stand up as a sacred duty.
Yeah.
As so many people all over feel, there's a sacred duty in one way or another. But you, I thought it was so beautiful, and that really resonated for me. To to treat, this was in the very beginning of Uma's teaching this morning, but to treat the inner self with the same reverence as I approach the guru. And it brought tears to my eyes to, that just brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah.
And a deep sense of devotion and gratitude.
I felt that as well when I was preparing. I was, you know, reading her script and getting all of my notes ready. I felt that too. That just went, oh, yeah. Approach my own wisdom with reverence as well.
With the tenderness, I think, I feel like I can observe that.
Yeah.
In Uma.
Thank you. You can observe that in Uma. Thank you. So nice to see you all. Prabha's here from Ireland.
Oh.
There she is. Hi. Can you unmute? Mukti, will you send her an unmute invitation and see what happens?
I've sent her a couple of unmutes.
Okay.
She's not getting it.
Can't find her mic. Well, give us your blessing. Please give us your blessing from Ireland. We're looking forward to your return on June 18th. And we're all holding you in our hearts and our minds as you're there with your family and friends for such deep communion, we'll call it. Okay, others. As we prepare to conclude, I really want to honor you for the way that you show up. It's rare, you know this, it's rare. Rare. You have such good karma. I have such good karma. Think about it. It's such a rare opportunity to have a sangha, a spiritual community like this, who will practice deeply and engage in the world fully and trust one another. It's so rare. So I honor you. I offer my pranams, my respect, and my love. And I know Umaji does and would if she were sitting here right now as well. So all that you're dealing with, I'm praying for you and with you. And hold up your sign on Saturday, whether you're out with a group of people or you're on your cushion, let your light shine for peace and justice. I have decided I will be here on site again next Thursday. If you live nearby, you're welcome to come in person, or if you live far away and you want to come. And I have decided that I will make recordings for the weeks I can't be here and post them so that every week we'll have something. Om. Bye now. Look at those.